Hello and welcome to this podcast of the IFRS Interpretations Committee. I'm Bob Garnett, Chair of the Interpretations Committee, and I'm joined by Michael Stewart, Director of Implementation Activities at the IASB. We've just finished a two-day meeting of the committee discussing a range of topics, all of which will be referred to in the IFRIC update, which is the detailed record and the official record of the proceedings. What I'd like to do today is to discuss some of the issues that were on our agenda. The first one, Michael, is the review of the constituents' comment letters on a proposal that we had to account for production phase, what we call stripping costs, the removal of the waste material in mining operations. And we had something like 50 comment letters in response to this, not all of whom were entirely supportive. No. Many of whom had identified some other issues and some practical concerns that they had with our proposals. So what would you say are some of the important takeaways from those comment letters?
Okay, thanks, Bob. Yes, there was a range of support or encouragement from the constituents who responded. As you say, some did encourage us to look more at or felt that there was already sufficient guidance in some of the IFRSs. But those who were encouraging us to continue suggested that we should be looking more specifically at the costs that are incurred in the stripping cost, the waste removal process. And I think one of the areas where people did express particular concerns was the notion of a stripping campaign and how to make that operational. So I think one of the areas where the committee will be spending some time at a future meeting exploring this area further is looking at what are the costs that should be identified that are associated with the actual waste removal activity itself, and how should those be apportioned between the production of ore and the removal of waste when those two activities occur at the same time. So I think it's going to be a case of looking at the particular costs and then the apportionment of those between the two outcomes from the one activity.
All right. Using a term like stripping campaign sounds very warlike. So we are presuming that we're not antagonistic with our constituents on this one. But of course, companies have been accounting for these costs, but not always in the same way. Sometimes we understand there are differences in the geology of the mine that causes people to look at things differently. And sometimes people just use a general approach. A lot of reference has been made to a life of mine plan, the anticipation of what's going to happen over the whatever the life of the mine could be, anything from 5 to 500 years, I suppose. But you're suggesting that we be more specific but not prescriptive in this campaign that we're waging to improve financial reporting. All right, let's move on to another item then. Because I'm sure at the subsequent meeting we'll have a little bit more to report on how we're developing on deferred stripping. Something that we have discussed at several meetings, last time back in November of last year, dealing with put options that are held by non-controlling interests or the minority shareholders, where they can put their minority holdings to the controlling shareholder. Previously, I think the committee had decided that it was a project that it couldn't complete because it required extensive changes to the accounting literature, and the board had a project, what's known as Financial Instruments with Characteristics of Equity, or to give it its acronym, FICE. Mm-hmm. But the board isn't actually pursuing this project actively at the moment. It's a little bit on the back burner. So I understand you invited one of your colleagues from the United States, from FASB, to share some thoughts and views on this topic. Where actually did we get to on that?
Yes, I think it's worth noting that the board in their joint project with the FASB on the FICE project has decided to look or pick that project up again after June of this year. And some of the comments that we'd received when we published our tentative agenda decision back in September, there was concerns expressed by a number of constituents that this is a real practice issue right now, and that a number of constituents wanted either the board or the interpretations committee to try and address this in the short-term basis in order to address those concerns. So one of the issues that the interpretations committee was themselves concerned about, though, was that anything they might develop should be at least consistent, or as far as possible, consistent with the direction in which the FICE project appears to be headed. So hence we invited the director responsible for the FICE project from the FASB to talk to the committee about his thoughts, his personal thoughts on the direction there, and also his thoughts on some of the options that had been considered at the November Interpretations Committee. I think the some of the highlights from that discussion are that we should explore how we might be able to develop a short-term solution, whether it's just within the committee or a combination of the committee working particularly closely with the board on this topic, to see if we can propose an amendment, maybe a combination of an amendment and an interpretation that can provide some clarity here to resolve this diversity in practice, but with the intention of focusing on maybe the IS 32 aspect of the current guidance, which is where some of the particular issues arise, and see if we can avoid interfering with the guidance that is in IS 39 or IFRS 9, so that any solution that we come up with is really just focused on the IS 32 classification rather than the recognition and measurement guidance that we already have in IFRS. In terms of the where an interpretation might come in, would perhaps be where we would need to provide some additional guidance in order to get an accounting solution here that would help people resolve the difficulties that are seen in practice.
All right. It's always unfortunate when two different groups of people read the same words and come up with vastly different ways in which they want to account for it. But I think the sentiments that I've heard expressed, which was not a decision-making session, the educational session that we were talking about, that many of the committee members, in fact, had a sympathy for providing information that was, shall we say, more intuitive rather than just strictly according to the way in which the standard might be required to be implemented. So we can expect over the next few months some further developments on that and, as you say, possibly some changes to the standard. But fortunately not a standard that's under current review, one of the older ones. One of the older standards, of course, that has been around for a long time is IS-1. And fortunately we didn't have any new issues coming up on the classification of debt, whether it's current or whether it's non-current, but a continuation of a discussion at a previous meeting. And after some outreach conducted with other standard setters around the world, then the committee, I understand, has now decided to pursue an annual improvement to reduce diversity and, in effect, to say if a loan which otherwise would be payable within 12 months but for which an agreement has already been negotiated with the same lender on substantially the same terms, then that could be classified as non-current. No cash is changing hands, so that seems to be intuitive to me. Is there anything else we need to do on that?
Well, this one is, yes, an issue where we had, we did some additional outreach to just understand the extent of views in practice at the moment. And I think where there was a renegotiation agreement before the balance sheet date that would come into effect after the balance sheet date, but with a different lender, there was general agreement that that should not qualify as a non-current classification because the original lender was going to need to be repaid on the due date, and then the new lender would be providing the funds for the entity's purposes. And so the proposed amendment there is to clarify that the non-current classification for a refinance really needs to be with the same lender, and that by inference, the if it's with a different lender, that that would not qualify for the non-current classification.
Well, Michael, as we've learned from experience, sometimes it's not enough just to tell people what they should be doing. You need to tell people what they should not be doing as well, and then it removes that doubt. But there is a little bit of doubt in the final item that we were discussing today. Contingent pricing of property, plant and equipment and intangible assets. It sounds a very grand title, but the contingent pricing is presumably where there's an agreement to pay something now, and if some event happens in the future, then a further payment will have to be made. Now, it seems fairly simple and straightforward to me, of course, that if you're buying something, that you account for it on the historical cost basis at what it costs you. But we do seem to run foul of this concern that a company might actually have got control of the asset before the contingency's been resolved. So what are we going to do here?
Well, this is one where the committee has decided to take this onto their agenda to try and develop a solution to this. Probably it would result in an interpretation, but that would be still to be decided. The issue really, there's a couple of aspects to it. One centres around the circumstances in which a liability should be recorded for the contingent price that may need to be paid in the future. But also connected with that is if there is a revision to the liability that's recorded for that contingent price, or if there was no liability recorded on day one but there was a liability recorded at a subsequent date, that change in the liability recorded, should that be included, the cost of that liability be included as an additional cost of the asset that has been purchased, or which would seem to be consistent with the notion of recording the asset at the amount that has been that it has cost the company. It would also be consistent with the guidance that we have in IFRIC 1, where if we've got a revision to a liability associated with a decommissioning obligation for an asset, that we would adjust the cost of the asset to reflect the change in that liability. The alternative point of view, though, is looking at the guidance that we have in IAS 39, which tells us that when we have a change to the measurement of a financial liability because we've changed our estimate of the amount payable, that that change should be recognised in profit or loss. In fact, there are some similarities here with the issue that we've been dealing with the put options over non-controlling interests. And in fact, there's another piece of literature, IFRS 3, that does give guidance on contingent consideration within the context of a business combination, which has guidance very consistent with IAS 39, which says that where you've got a change in the amount payable for the contingent consideration, that you record that within profit or loss. So we have a couple of pieces of guidance indicating that we should record these change in liability and profit or loss. Another piece of guidance which suggests that we should record the effect of the change in liability against the cost of the asset. And really we need to explore which one seems to be the most appropriate, considering all requirements of IFRS, but obviously importantly, what would give the more useful information to a user of the financial statements.
Right, well, it sounds as if this could be a very intellectually challenging project, and one if we've got to choose between two very robust and very authoritative standards that give conflicting guidance, we've got to find some way of bridging the gap and correcting this little aberration. It seems though that a lot of the issues that are coming towards us are really related to, we understand how to calculate the debits and we know that the credit's the equal and opposite amount, but where do we put them in the financial statements, in the balance sheet or in the income statement? But we will watch that with interest. The next meeting of the IFRS Interpretations Committee will be held on the 10th and 11th of March, so please look out for that. And the topics that are coming through. Unlike the board, we can never be certain what topics are going to be on the agenda, because that depends on what our constituents have discovered they no longer think is as clear as they once did. That concludes this podcast, but before I go, I need to put in the friendly disclaimer that the views that have been expressed in the podcast are those of the participants and may not necessarily be the views of the ISB nor of the IFRS Interpretations Committee. But if you want to learn more about the activities and the decisions, look on the ifrs.org website or read about it in the IFRIC update. Thank you and goodbye.